Okay,
and there's a part in Achrayimos right before it's the part that we start reading on Yom Kippur and Minta, the Parsha of Arayos. The Gemara says, why do we read the Parsha of Arayos? There really are two Parshas of Arayos. One is in Achrayimos, one is in Kedoshim. So it's very interesting to compare and contrast the two. Two very long lists, but slight nuanced differences. But in the introduction to the Arayos, Kamase Eretz Mitzrayim Esher Yishavtem Ba Lo Tasu, Chamase Eretz Kinan Esher Nimi Vyeschem Shem Ba Lo Tasu. Hashem is warning Am Yisrael that you've been in a location that has been very sexually promiscuous. We sense that already in Parshas Chayesara, Malei Zima, Pyro's attempted rape of Sarah, and Chazal fill in the blanks even during the bondage of Mitzrayim. And by the way, the culture that you will be exposed to, the culture of these savage cannibals in the land of Canaan, there's also a lot of sexual decadence. So be careful, you're going from one culture to another culture, and in general there's something called cultural creep. But in particular, cultural creep is particularly acute in sexual matters. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving a warning, which it's interesting, I was thinking about this today, why is Moshe less sensitive to this in Devarim? When Moshe warns them in Devarim about the culture they're about to encounter, he's more concerned with Avodah Zarah. He's more concerned with intermarriage. He's less concerned with the sexual breakdowns and dysfunction that you've seen in these societies. Is it because he's been burned by the Egel Azav? Is that something he's particularly sensitive to? Is it harder for him to sense that? It's just interesting that Moshe makes less mention of Kadosh Baruch Hu makes mention of it in Parsha Zacharias. Anyway, Rashi notes the double language. Kimase Eretz Mitzrayim, Asher Yeshavtim Ba. Well, we know we were in Mitzrayim. The Torah doesn't have to tell us we lived in Mitzrayim. Kamase Eretz Kinan, Asher Ani Mivyeschem Shama. Well, we know where we're heading. So the literal answer is this is just stressing you were there, you're heading there. But Rashi feels that there's an added accent by each of these extra clauses. Kamase Eretz Mitzrayim Asher Yeshavtim Ba. Not only was Mitzrayim sexual over sex or sexually criminal, but the specific town that you lived in was the worst. That was Las Vegas. That was a particularly troublesome location. Rashi says, "Kemase Eretz Mitzrayim, v'osa makom sheyashvu bo Yisrael mekol kol menakol," which is really fascinating because we thought Goshen was like Lakewood. The Jews live in Goshen. We think they're building their own little island of Jewish sanity within this overall world of Egyptian monstrosity. But evidently Goshen wasn't the easiest place to live morally. And the same is true, Asher Ani Mivyeschem Shama, that Kinan, Asher Ani Mivyeschem Shama, you're right. Overall Kinan, that whole area, Aram, Kinan, sexual challenging. But Asher Ani Mivyeschem Shama, also Amamim Shekavshu, those particular seven tribes that you are engaging with, they're even Mekulkalim Yosef Yikulam. Now, is this just coincidence? It just happens to be that we could have lived in any city in Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was a pretty big empire. But just as fate would have it, Goshen happened to be the place that was the most sexually promiscuous. And there could have been many different nations that we warred with, but it just so happens to be that the seven nations happened to be most sexually criminal. I don't think it's circumstance. I think that part of the Jewish mission in Mitzrayim, whether it's in Galus or in Eretz Yisrael, when we live in our land, is to defeat evil. And we defeat evil in many different forms. We defeat evil when it's in political form, people who want to control other people, murder other people. And that's why throughout history, the Jewish engagement with foreign powers has always been frontline, main card events. We haven't been persecuted by Finland. We weren't persecuted by the Mayans. That is some ancient Eskimo tribe. It was Nebuchadnezzar at the height of his empire who wanted to extend his empire and his idolatrous culture on the entire world. And Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah stood up to him. It was the Persian Empire afterwards, which controlled the entire Leviathan Crescent. It was in the end, it was Rome and Aesop and Western civilization. In our day, well, it was Russia. It was Russia in the 80s and 90s, and we opposed, and to a degree was Hitler, who wanted to impose his fascist rule upon and racist rule upon the entire world. Unfortunately, we weren't able to withstand that as much as we would have liked to. And now we're standing up to Islamic terror, which it's hard to know what the future holds. No one's a prophet, but it seems as if it's a threat to all of humanity. It's not just a threat to the Jewish people. It's only in the political arena, because we're HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chosen people, our challenge on this world is to stand up to evil. And we stand up to evil, not just political evil, but also to moral evil. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts us into positions where we have to face the most decadent part of the culture and provide a different message. So the fact that the Jewish people were in Goshen, or the fact that the Jewish people are encountering the seven most sexually deranged tribes, is not just incidental. It's, you are being placed into these situations to present a different message to humanity, to defeat those cultures in the sense of Canaan literally, in the sense of Mitzrayim continued. But clearly the Jewish experience dealt a lethal blow to their cultural self-confidence. And that's our position, that's our role in this world, not just to defeat evil on the military battlefield, but on the moral battlefield. So that's why Rashi's stressing, it's not incidental that Goshen happened to provide the biggest moral challenge. It's not incidental that the seven nations provided the greatest moral challenge. Okay, the end of that pasuk is, Es mishpatai tasu es chokasai tishmur, the next pasuk, Alechas bohem ani Hashem elokichem. So pasuk mentions mishpatim and chukos. Rashi in his classic way, mishpatim are logical, chukos the way Rashi interprets, that's the only interpretation, but chukos are irrational. Zos chukas adam ki amas boel paraduma. Okay, listen carefully. Pasuk dalet is, mishpatai tasu, asiya for mishpatim, chukosai tishmiru, shmira for chukos. Next pasuk, repetitive, stress. Ushmartem es chukosai, the es mishpatai asher yaase osam adam. So here there's more of a merging. Ushmartem es chukosai ves mishpatai asher yaase. So instead of dividing mishpatai tasu, chukosai tishmiru, they're both together. Ushmartem es chukosai ves mishpatai asher tasu, asher yaase. So Rashi says, why? Don't think you should only be shomer of the chukos and be osa the mishpatim. Litain shmira le mishpatim ve'asiyah le chukos. So we're inverting. It's a palindrome. Don't just think that chukos have shmira and mishpatim have asiyah. No. Mishpatim also have shmira. Chukos also have asiyah. This is a word game. We're shuffling words around. There's evidently something about chukos that lends itself naturally to shmira. And there's something about mishpatim that lends itself naturally to asiyah. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, but don't only follow your natural inclination. Religion is not just about exercising your natural expression for different mitzvahs. It's about bringing certain attitudes that are more natural in certain mitzvahs, even to all the mitzvahs. So, for example, in our world, we'd say one of the areas that I think is very dangerous, we make an easy division between Adam l'makom and Adam l'chavera. Oh, Ben Adam l'chavera is not Ben Adam l'makom. You're not kind and moral. So sometimes these divisions are Ruchnias or Gashmias. It's another one of my favorite. It creates a very bifurcated world. Ruchnias, right now, you're Ruchni, you're Gashmi, your body now, you're hungry, you're learning. It's more merged, it's more fused than that. So what is the natural inclination of Shmira for Chukos and Asiya for Mishpatim that the Torah is trying to compensate and spread both of those attitudes to both the mitzvahs? So Asiya is easy. It's very hard to perform mitzvahs that are irrational. You don't understand them. Why are you doing them? As Rashi says earlier, both the satan, the internal questions start to generate, but also the umas ha'olam. People make fun of you. They look at you. When umas ha'olam see Jewish families, and umas ha'olam see Jewish charity, philanthropy, when umas ha'olam see Jewish chagim festivals, these all resonate very deeply. Look at that people of history. Look at the people of morality. Look at the people of strong faith. These are what we're known for. So it's easier to perform mitzvahs that have rational basis. It's harder to perform paraduma and shatnez and sometimes for some people kashrus. And Shabbos is easier because in the modern world it's pretty easy for us to appreciate the rest and the 24 hours of being offline that Shabbos provides. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, don't just execute mishpatim, asiyah, you should also execute chukos. That's easy. What about the opposite way? Don't just be shomer chukos, be shomer mishpatim. Well, once you make that leap of faith and you accept something irrational, then it's easier to be vigilant and scrupulous about it and be careful about it because you know you don't understand it. So you're very machmir about things. Let me give you an example. When it comes to ceremonies surrounding death, people die. The Chevra Kadishas, especially in Eretz Yisrael, are in some cases notoriously inflexible. And in general, halacha is very, very rigid. Why is there rigidity about Dine Misa? Because we just don't know. We don't know what's on the other side of the grave. No one has been back. So we don't know whether this minhag or that divrei kabbalah or this practice, how it will affect the mace and how it will affect the neshama. when it comes to, I don't know, allocating money for tzedakah, I know what it's about. So there's a tendency to be very machmir and very scrupulous and very careful about the occult and areas that we don't know and the irrational, because we know we're not treading on human terrain. We're treading on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's arena. And when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's arena, as Parsha Shmini told us and as Parsha Zacharias reminds us, you have to be careful not to make the mistake of Nadav and Avihu. And one false slip can be very, very tragic and very consequential. So when it comes to Paraduma, for example, anyone who's ever lived in Mishnayos in Paraduma, how punctilious, how careful, the Hazals, the Hafrasha, you're learning Daf Yomri, the Ramafrish, the Kohen, Shivas Yamim, I don't know what Paraduma is. I better be careful to follow the steps carefully and to be super machmir as they were. But when it comes to Mitzvah Sichlios, oh, this is my mitzvah. I can be a little bit relaxed about it. I know how to apply the mitzvah. I can be relaxed. Shabbos is a classic example, right? We all know what Shabbos is. Shabbos is meant to provide rest and recreation and family. So isn't it better to travel on Shabbos so that you can go to a park? Or isn't it better to get in a car and be with your family? Because we know what Shabbos is, or at least that level of Shabbos. So when it comes to rational mitzvahs, there's more of a tendency to humanize them and to somehow cut corners, not to be as scrupulous. So that's why Hashem is saying the same degree of punctilious adherence and precision that you bring to a chok, you have to bring to a mishpat as well. And that's why the Torah flips them. Ushmartem es mishpatai tasu es chokasai teshmiru. And by the way, you should also bring shmira to mishpatim and asiyat techukos. One final Rashi, because I spoke about it yesterday. Asher yasa osam adam v'chai bohem. So what's the pshat? Well, it's hard to know what's pshat, what's drash here. But what's the most popular association with v'chai bohem? Pikuach nefesh is docha kala Torah kula. Exactly. So it's a very affirming statement, as I spoke about extensively last night in the Chug, about how Yiddishkeit embraces life, how Yiddishkeit embraces prosperity, how Yiddishkeit embraces Olam Hazeh. Hashem wants us to live, not run away from this world, and not flee from the realities, and not turn religion to escapism. What does Rashi say? Rashi says, V'chai bohem li Olam Haba. You don't know this, Rashi, because you expect V'chai bohem, you know, it's like almost automatic. He said it yourself. That's not a Rashi. That's not the drasha Rashi brings. Rashi says you'll reach eternity. Shim tamar be'olam hazeh halosef ormeis. It's only transient. It's only fleeting. Everyone's going to die. So isn't it odd? Not so odd. But the very same two-word phrase in the Torah that emphasizes olam haba also emphasizes olam hazeh. It's not odd because in Yiddishkeit they're the same. Yiddishkeit does not dichotomize the two. You want to get to heaven? Bring it there with you. You know what Olam Haba is going to be? It's going to feel very much like Olam Hazeh. You just won't have the physical impediments. It's not some other reality, some ethereal world. You study Hashem's will. You don't have any impediments, natural impediments like physicality, other impediments like lust, desire, weakness. And it's pretty much like this world. And whatever spiritual level you reach in this world, that becomes your level for eternity. That's how you experience the world to come. There's an English poet named Henry Drummond who once said that to get to heaven, we have to take it there with us. And for us, it's not two worlds, it's a continuum. It's not a reward, it's a result. A reward is, if you go to sleep one time, I tell my child you'll get some candy. A result is, if you go to sleep one time, you tell your child you'll be awake tomorrow, you'll have a great day, you'll really have a fantastic... That's a result, it's a natural result. Olam Haba is not a reward, it's not a process, as in Tiknes Ishtecho said, Olam Haba Kabo Pras. It's a result. It's, you live a life of abstinence, of discipline, of ability in this world, you move to the next world, and you get to enjoy that world without any of the limitations that this world provides. So that's why this one, two-word phrase captures both Olam Haba as well as Olam Hazeh. And where is it located? Where does the Torah insert this union of Olam Hazeh, Olam Haba, this fusion? Right in the middle of the laws of sexuality. Because the laws of sexuality are a perfect example of how it's not a reward, it's just the result, because what ultimately does the Jewish laws of sexuality provide? Strong family structure, strong community, strong generation, strong history, nobility. You look at people with sexual addicts and the types of crimes they commit, the types of aggression they express on others. You look, unfortunately, certain cultures that aren't able to support family life in a natural way with a single parenting, which is a rampant scourge, and the communities just fall apart. And not just Jews, the other communities that are very, very sexual, not just sexual, but intermarriage and marriage and the sanctity of marriage. Some of the other communities that aren't Jewish, and you see how strong and solid those communities are, education, finance, and continuity. So it's a perfect example. Why should you keep the laws of sexuality, of marriage? Because it will lead, not just to Olam Haba, oh, Hashem will pat you on the back when you get to Olam Haba, you did a good job, but your Olam Hazeh will be much more elegant and much more successful. And then as an extension, you'll receive Olam Haba. So three different Rashis. One Rashi about Am Yisrael being placed right in bullseye, right on the moral battlefield, where we're the main event. We're not some sideshow. Number two, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is reminding us to be as scrupulous about rational mitzvahs as we are about irrational mitzvahs. Number three, the Chai Bohem fuses the two, and it's inserted specifically in this location.
Thank you.
Good day, everyone. Have a good day. You're welcome. Have a good day.